Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Methane. We got it. You don't. We got the bright lights, the cool cars, the awesome weapons. We got bombs. You see, power equals power. It's as simple as that. So if you ain't with us, I guess you're in for a bit of a shock. So why don't y'all talk amongst yourselves? Think about it. Do me a favor, huh? Don't think too hard.
Hey, Zed heads, welcome to our podcast. I'm Ben.
And I'm Alex.
And this is The Cast of Us, episode 641.
And in this episode, we're covering The Walking Dead, Dead City, season 2, episode 1, Power Equals Power.
We are kicking off the season, season 2 of the show. I won't lie, I was excited to get back to it, and I'm excited to get back to podcasting about it. I've gotten some really good feedback from Jason on the lead up that you and I did. Awesome. He's excited to have you on. He thinks you're a great addition to this too. So we're going to continue that and hopefully not let him or anybody else down.
That is my goal in life. You know, I've come to see Jason as a father figure in a lot of ways. I can't disappoint my father. So I'm trying to do you proud, Pops.
Well, he is the pod father, so...
He is the pod father, so from him, all pods are made.
Yeah. So, notice how I just went right past it.
Right over it. I loved it.
Before we get into actually the summary, the plot summary of the episode and the breakdown of the episode that we're going to discuss, there's one or two things I want to do. So, first things first, I did promise last week on the lead up that we were going to kick off this week's episode with a voicemail. And that voicemail being from, of course, Steve Brown, who sent us a short, like 15, 20 second voicemail just to kind of wish us luck in the season. So I feel like there's no better way to start our coverage of this than to play that voicemail from Steve. So, you know what? We're just going to do that now.
Fuck no.
That's the wrong one. And I did it intentionally, folks. That was a little joke.
That was fantastic.
Here, this is the actual voicemail from Steve.
Hello, Ben and Alex. I think, I don't know. Cast of Us, but for Dead City season 2, I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts and previewing or at least recapping season 1 because I only remember kind of what happened and I don't have time to make a rewatch. Well, maybe I do. Anyway, talk to you later.
So thank you for that, Steve. And I got to say, too, at the time that I received that voicemail, I had yet to start my rewatch of 6 episodes. So, Steve, if I could have done it, you could have done it.
You know,
and I hope you did.
That's a really solid point. I worked a full-time job, have 2 kids, still did the rewatch, Steve. Come on. Where are you at?
But if you didn't, it's fine. That's what we were here for, and that's what the lead-up was for. But the other thing I want to do before we get into the coverage and we read the plot summary is we did mention Jason quite a bit already on this episode. And Jason actually sent us an email to give us a little bit of feedback before we dive into things, too, because as we did in the lead up, we really did break down Negan as a character a little bit, reasons why people would still like him, reasons why people wouldn't like him. And I, of course, am always interested in Jason's take on that, too, because he has followed The Walking Dead since the beginning. And once we're done with The Last of Us and we're done with Dead City, he's going back into the rewatch of The Walking Dead. So the whole Negan of it all is going to come up again anyway.
It sure is.
So I figured Jason sent us this email. This is another reason we're gonna lead off with this. Not to mention the fact that I teased it on the Last of Us coverage. So if you're here for that, I don't want to disappoint. So here's the email from Jason. He says, I haven't seen the first episode of season 2 yet, but I very much enjoyed your recap, and I think you guys make a great team. Thank you. And also, I'm really glad you're covering this show so I don't have to.
That tracks.
My problem with how The Walking Dead has handled Negan is mostly about his harem. For a long time, even though Negan's redemption arc, quote-unquote redemption arc, the show seemed to have forgotten about that part of it. Until episode 22 of the final season, when the show did acknowledge it happened, when Negan was trying to get Ezekiel to team up with him. Ezekiel, I stayed away from you for years, for a reason. Negan, well, you have to shelve that shit. Ezekiel, melting people's faces with irons, coercing women into marrying you, slaughtering my people, that shit I have not forgotten. But Negan never apologized for coercing women to sleep with him. On Twitter, JDM said Negan never actually slept with any of those women. I think it's lame that he said that. It's ridiculous, and I find it insulting on a bunch of different levels. Like, A, of course he slept with them. We saw them taking pregnancy tests, and we didn't need to see that anyway. It was already clear. B, it's insulting the victims of sexual coercion to just brush it off. And C, get over your ego and be okay playing a guy who did some shitty things. JDM seems to need Negan to be a full-on hero. I think they did a way better job with Negan in the comics. He apologized for everything and killed Alpha without helping her first to prove his sincerity. And then the community said, okay, you don't have to be in prison anymore, but we're banishing you. The end. Even in the show, I'd be much more on board with enjoying stories about Negan if he'd have ever acknowledged and apologized for raping a bunch of women. But instead, Dead City even tries to minimize all the other stuff that Negan did by pretending it was all just an act because he thought that's what he needed to do to protect people. Right? You didn't enjoy it at all, did you? All that chuckling was just show because it was really important that people see you laughing while you bashed Glenn's skull in. As I said, if they'd accepted what Negan actually was and have him grow from there, then I'd be on board. But to pretend we're just misunderstanding what actually happened, I'm not really interested. I will watch because it's The Walking Dead. But then again, I also watched all of Fear the Walking Dead. Cheers, Jason. P.S. I know not everyone feels this way, and I'm grateful to have Ben and Alex there to present a fan's view of this story. Thanks, guys, on behalf of all of us.
So first off, that was awesome. And I think Jason really highlighted something that we maybe touched on for a sentence or two, but the harem piece of it. And you're absolutely right. He never apologized. He never showed any contrition for that at this point. And with JDM's comments, it sounds like they are just going to try and brush that under the rug, but you really can't. Based on everything that the wives said when they were talking to Eugene and whatever the case may be, Dwight, like you really can't sweep that one under the rug. And I would understand so much, like, if he could just own it. There's nothing wrong, not necessarily, but like, just admit that you did this and that you feel sorry for it and that you are going to be a better person. Like, then you can work towards redemption. But until he admits that, until he vocalizes that, Jason's right. There is no path to that true redemption until he can vocalize all of his sins and apologize for them properly.
Yeah, no, I agree with you too. And I do agree with what Jason said a lot. And we didn't really we did mention the harem thing when we were talking about Negan's character last week, but we didn't really dive into it to the degree that Jason did. And seeing it from that point of view, I absolutely agree with everything that he said. And like you just said as well, like until he admits it verbally, it's not anything that we know he has ever admitted that happened or gotten over. It's similar. I mean, and we know characters can be horrible people, but can still be redeemed for the characters that they are or that they were before. One of the characters that we mentioned last week, too, was talking about Ben Linus from Lost. Ben Linus is a perfect example of that. He is somebody who was a horrible person, did horrible things, admitted to doing those horrible things, and made a redemption from the horrible things that he did, even to the point where at the end, he still didn't feel completely redeemed.
There it is. He still didn't feel comfortable going into the afterlife because he still had journeys to make up for. He still had good to do in the world. That I could not agree with you more. Ben Linus is a perfect comp because he did come around and fully... To an extent, up until like the last four episodes, Jaime Lannister was a lot the same way. He admitted what he did, and you could see a little bit of that turnaround. So, no, I agree.
I mean, now, there are certain things that happened in this season premiere or certain things that have been nodded at in the season premiere that could force Negan to confront the person that he was in the past. So, could some of those elements come into play in this second season? Absolutely. Will they? We're just going to have to watch.
Can't wait
see.
To find out. Cannot wait to find out the direction it goes in.
We've got seven more episodes to find out if any more of Negan's past is going to come back to haunt him.
Sure do.
So on that note, let's dive into the season premiere.
Let's get it.
So Walking Dead, Dead City, season 2, episode 1, Power Equals Power. The plot summary for the episode. In the season 2 premiere of The Walking Dead, Dead City, titled Power Equals Power, the story resumes several months after the events of season 1, with Maggie and Negan on diverging paths. Maggie, now residing in the Bricks, strives to build her relationship with her son Herschel, while gripping with the guilt over leaving Negan behind. Their settlement faces a new threat when the New Babylon Federation arrives, seeking to recruit residents for a mission to seize Manhattan's methane resources. At least that's what they're claiming to take over Manhattan, but it's all a facade. We'll get into it. I'm breaking away from reading the plot.
I'm loving it.
To protect her community, Maggie volunteers for the mission, undergoing a harrowing trial against walkers to prove her worth. Meanwhile, Negan endures captivity under the Dama and the Croat in Manhattan. Initially resistant to their demands to unite the city's factions against New Babylon, Negan gives in when the Dama threatens his family's safety. Armed with a revamped, electrified version of his infamous bat, Lucille, Negan reclaims his brutal leadership persona to rally Manhattan's warlords.
Nicely done. Nicely done. Great little recap.
Yeah, I thought so.
I thought it was really interesting how essentially this season started off the same exact way last season ended, where you're showing us two different sides of the same coin. Our hero and heroine are both being recruited by opposite factions with opposite goals that are going to be meeting head to head, and just how they're both going towards it. It was a fascinating look at how both of these soldiers are brought back into war.
We are kicking right off after season one, because at the end, we talked a little bit about this in the recap last week, was, you know, we have the Dama and we have the Croat, who represent these nomadic, who we believed were villainous, evil people, which they kind of are because they are living with no rules. And, you know, who we believe these are going to be the villains of the story. And then we get introduced to New Babylon Federation. And now we know that their ulterior motives are in a different way that we initially thought as well. They're not just about laws, but they're about claiming power. So are they the actual villains? Do we know it? It really is making me question who are the actual villains of this story. Is everybody a villain, or is only one half the villain?
And isn't that just kind of the theme right now in the apocalyptic television shows on TV? You know, it's the wolves versus the scars. It's the New Yorkers versus the New Babylons. Like, who are you going to side with? Both sides have done some atrocities. Both sides are going to continue to do atrocities. Which one, I guess, has the more valiant claim to morality? But that's war. That's two sides using force to win the battle of morality. It's a lose-lose every time for the people.
Yeah, I mean, and the way I'm seeing it now is, and again, it's too early to kind of distinguish how the rest of the season is going to go, but the way the season two starts off with, that if you were to watch this, you would – in my opinion, you would see New Babylon obviously as these people who want to come in and claim this land for their for themselves. And the people that are in New York are people that are literally just uniting together to for the sake of protecting what they have. And when it's you look at it that way, how do you decide?
So essentially, it's the cultured versus the uncultured. I mean, the joke about New Babylon is it's pretty much going to end up just being a carbon copy of Saviors 2.0, but with, you know, an actual charter in place. The governor's Negan, you got your right-hand man in Simon, you got your nerd character in Eugene when he was with the Saviors. Like, there are so many parallels. Heck, the lady that hung the guy at the bricks is essentially the new Arat. I mean, 100%, that's the same character that we've seen 100 times in The Walking Dead, just with New Babylon. So that's it's the scariness of civilization. It's all of them hiding behind a shield and a set of laws to do whatever the hell they want to achieve whatever means they want. And it's a really fascinating way to look at things.
Yeah, I mean, and you mentioned, obviously, we get a couple new characters throughout this episode that we were not introduced to in season one. And you mentioned one of them, Major Lucia Narvaez, and who is basically the right-hand person of the New Babylon leader at this point. And she is such an interesting character to me already because she seems to have taken the place or seems to be on the same level that Pearly was in season one. But now Pearly seems to have a much more open opinion as to how people really are. People aren't exactly what they seem to be. He obviously lied about capturing and killing Negan, which that's going to come back to bite him in the ass. That's going to come back to bite him in the ass at some point too. But I almost feel like there's this now, everybody kind of has their antagonist to themselves, whether they're an antagonist or they have an antagonist. We have,
and Negan and Maggie.
Negan and Maggie. Although, are they really antagonists to each other?
It's a tug of war.
But we have New Babylon versus the Croat and the Dama, or
New York.
New York. That's a better way to put it. But we also have, I think, Pearly and Lucia are probably going to end up being antagonists to each other.
And I think the general slash governor, I keep saying general, I mean governor, I think she's going to have an appreciation for Maggie. And I think she's going to really take a shine, I think, to how Maggie operates and how she's just a badass that will rip your throat out with her teeth.
I'm going to make an adjustment to that. I don't think it's going to be the governor that's going to take a shine to Maggie. I think it's going to be the major. I think it's going to be Lucia. Because from the coming attraction, now the governor, even without seeing coming attractions, we know for a fact the governor is not going to New York. She's 100%. Sending people to do it for herself. It seems like Lucia is.
Okay.
So Lucia is going to be the one that actually sees Maggie in action, which she already has.
I like it. So real quick question about the intro, and I throw this out to all of the Podcastica listeners that are listening right now. The steampunk New York groove intro in which we are collecting Zeds, throwing them in the acid bath and turning them into methane. Is that not one of the best intros in The Walking Dead seasons at large? Like, I would put it up there with, what was it, season three, when they're just silently going through the house and Carl finds the dog food. Like, it's a really good season opener, I think.
It is. Now, listeners won't be able to see this because we're not doing video, but my very first note is circled, and it just says, back in the New York groove.
Back in the New York groove. What a phenomenal, phenomenal just wordless intro.
It literally is the best way. The way that whole cold open happens with that song, which is perfect for the environment, and we see exactly what is happening. You're right. They're killing zombies. They're collecting them. They're throwing them in. They're letting them, you know, decompose. I was going to say decapitate. That was not the word. We're seeing them decompose, producing the methane. We see the methane bubble go up. And then we see Radio City Music Hall light up.
And it's the thing we all strive for in prestige TV, which is show, don't tell. I don't need you to tell me the science. Just show me. That'll work.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely. That's a great point. Is that we already know from season one that the science works.
Yes.
Now we want to see it in action.
100%. And it makes perfect. I'm not going to question it from here on out. I'm good. That's all I needed. I'm good.
And we see it a number of times this episode. We see it in opening with Radio City Music Hall lighting up. And then we get it bookended at the end of the episode with the opposite side of that Radio City lighting up, which I thought was great because Kim Coates, who is another new character, who is an amazing actor. If you've never seen him in anything else like Sons of Anarchy or Goon.
I don't think I've seen him in anything, but he is just, what name did I give him before we started? Edgar Allan.
What did you call him? Edgar Allan Horrible.
I forget.
No, I forget, but it was good.
It was good. Damn it.
Obviously not good enough to remember.
No, but it was a play on Edgar Allan
Poe. So I have had Kim on my Wilhelm podcast.
Okay.
He's a multiple time guest on my Wilhelm podcast. He's a great conversation anytime I get them on. And now I'm actually going to try and get him on again so we can talk to him about the Dead City. But it was great that and I realize I'm kind of jumping ahead to the end, but I'm saving a majority of that conversation for when we get to it. But seeing at the end that we have the power in the church. So mm-hmm. that's lit up. So they yep. know they have power. They have flamethrowers, which are powered by methane.
Absolutely.
And then if he questioned that at any point after that, to walk outside and see Radio City lit up, there's no question now they have what he says they have.
And just like the great Cersei Lannister once said, power is power.
Or the title of the episode, Power Equals Power.
You know, when I first saw the episode title, all I thought of was Cersei and Littlefinger in the courtyard. Okay, that's the only thing I could think of the entire time.
Yeah, that's fair. So let's kind of go to back to the beginning of the episode, starting at the bricks, because that's really where the episode starts off after the cold open. We see Maggie, Herschel, and Ginny, who speaks now, by the way.
Ginny talks. It's a thing now. We don't have to go over it. Thank you. Thank you for just letting that happen.
I mean, the actress has to memorize lines now, but it is what it is. It's still not a lot. She doesn't say much.
That's true. What angsty teen does.
Yeah, but true. That's also very true. But we see that Maggie is back at the bricks with Herschel, with Ginny. She's taking care of Ginny as she promised Negan that she would do. So she's living up to that promise. But we see there is still turmoil between Maggie and Herschel. There's steps made, obviously, at certain points, but there's still a lot of turmoil in their relationship.
There's a lot of work that needs to be done. And Herschel was fascinating for me this episode because when it starts off, he's a little bit softer with Maggie and he's a little bit more tender. And first off, the nice thing about an adolescent Herschel that's not really talking much is it gives Maggie and Lauren Cohen an opportunity to monologue like only she can. Oh my God. Give this woman 2 to 3 paragraphs of dialogue and she's going to crush it every time. That Firefly scene was dynamite. But I needed, for my soul, I think, to see Maggie and Herschel love each other as a mother and son unit, because in the entirety of this show's run up until that Firefly scene, all we've seen is the butting of the heads and the antagonism, even in the flashback scene. So to actually just see mother and son getting along and appreciating each other and him just giving her that little bit of love, like she deserved that. Thank goodness he gave it to her, given what happened later in the episode. But like, it was really nice just to see a tender moment between those two, because we haven't seen it since Walking Dead proper.
And I agree with you. That Firefly scene was very touching. It was nice seeing them actually connect again. And the reason for that is because it has yet to been revealed that Maggie is leaving again.
Sure.
She's home with Herschel, so there's room to make that improvement. Once it's revealed later on in the episode that she's going to be leaving to go back to New York, man, the tensions go high again between the two of them. But I wanted to make a call to that Firefly thing because she says how that was a signal that they used to use. Do we think that's going to come back into play later?
There's no way it doesn't. That's too much. That if Chekhov's gun was a flashlight, that would be Chekhov's flashlight.
Right?
Okay. That is going to come back up at some point.
Because we both know Herschel is not staying at the Bricks.
There's no way in hell. He is in love. He's clearly the cartographer that they need once they get into the city to map out how the city goes. Like they telegraph the hell out of that play that they're going to need him to develop the maps of the city as they go through and check off areas.
Oh, I didn't even really think of that, to be honest.
That's how you bring her. I mean, his ability to draw a map of the city, first off, super good, natural, fast. The nerd was extremely excited to get that map. Like, that's how they're going to utilize Herschel. I think that's how they're going to get him into the city, to a bit of cartography. That's my guess.
Well, I don't, it's, I think it might get to that point at some point, but it's going to be a Ginny situation to me from season one, in that he's going to go on his own.
Find an ice cooler.
Find a nice igloo and just cross
swimming.
Over the river.
Just keep yep. swimming.
But the only difference is that, unlike New Babylon that's coming over and is an enemy of the Croat and the Dama, I was going to say Logan, that's his actual name.
It is.
Herschel will be welcomed back.
Yeah, we'll get into that towards the end, I imagine, but I have questions about Herschel.
I'm just going to bring it up now, because we're talking about Herschel and Maggie and the Bricks.
Yeah.
Herschel's brainwashed.
Oh, clearly brainwashed. The reverence for which he spoke of New York when he was talking to, and I have the dude's name, Mr. Pierce. That's the geeky kid's name.
The Benjamin Pierce, I think, is his name.
Is actually. It Benjamin? Oh, yeah. That's great. Benjamin. No, that's fantastic. So the
flashbacks to high school,
right? The way that he spoke of New York with such reverence and such adoration. It was almost lusting after the city. And it's like, all right, dude, what the hell went on between you and the Doma? Like, what is this pull? I don't get it. And I'm terrified to find out what the answer is.
Well, I don't even think it's just the love for the city as well. I think it's the love for the Dama. I think
the motherly figure he couldn't get from Maggie, she was able to manipulatively figure out.
It's a weird comparison, but I kind of compare it to from Hook, the way yep. Peter Pan's kids were brainwashed by Captain Hook into believing he was a better father figure than Peter.
You said that in season one's coverage that's exactly what was going to happen, and they set those breadcrumbs up. So,
see?
Yeah, any chance you get to quote a Robin Williams movie, you're going to do it. And I appreciate your consistency, Ben. I do,
and I'm here for it.
Damn right. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go for it.
Another point about Herschel, and I'm just going to get into it now. Speaking of adolescent angsty teens, man, is he not doing his best Tanner Buchanan, Robbie Keane impression this episode? The way that he was going off on Maggie, I swear to God, I have seen Robbie Keane go off on Johnny Lawrence 100 times that way, and it felt so Cobra Kai, and I loved it so much. It brought me back a little bit to the Valley, and I love that.
I didn't think about it when it happened, but now that you've made that comparison, like, now I see it.
Even at the end of the episode when he finally like gets the knife in the wall, like, how is that not the end of it? Like, did you not expect a chrome cobra to show up on your screen with the flaming Cobra Kai coming? Like, that was the perfect episode ender for a Cobra Kai episode.
Like the end of Cobra Kai, yeah.
Easily.
The end of a Cobra Kai episode. No, I mean, and that's even more convincing to me too, of that he has always had this underlying mission in his head that whether Maggie goes back or not, he needs to get back to New York. He needs to get back with the Dama. He needs to get back with that group of people. A piece of him is missing. He needs to find that piece. Or it's not even that he needs to find, well, he needs to find that piece, but that piece is actually not his toe. It's the Dama. Like,
well, Ben, you could argue that little piece is gone all the way home.
Oh, God damn it. I hate that I actually enjoyed that.
You know, watching The Last of Us, you've appreciated puns once again. So that's just, and I'm the king of dad humor. So that's what I'm bringing to the table.
This is very true. But I mean, and I think that's one of the reasons why Herschel is actually so upset that Maggie is going.
Because he doesn't get to go.
He doesn't get to go. Exactly. She's going. Agree. He's the one that wants to go.
You know what? All right, so we're in the bricks then. Here's
Here's what I
was surprised then. So eventually Maggie has to go through one of the most intellect, like appropriate survivor scene, like audition scenes that made perfect sense. Yeah, if you're here to replace 20 people, kill 20 Zeds. That makes perfect sense. Anyone that wants to help, help now. I really thought Herschel was going to save Ginny. Not Maggie. I thought Herschel was going to save Ginny, and that was going to be him conscripting into the army. And I,
that would have been interesting.
I was expecting that the whole time. And then Maggie, thanks to all that plot armor, was able to get over those other five Zeds that were on her and help Ginny out. But I would have,
she had a dumpster on her that we didn't see.
You know what? That's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
Sorry.
But I really expected Herschel to be the one to save Ginny in that moment and that to be how he forced his way to New York. So that shocked me when they didn't go in that direction.
That's an interesting, I didn't even really think about that too, but you're right. Had he jumped in, the governor and the major would have said, you know,
you're done.
Stepped
you,
up.
You like, elected. Yep.
You've been drafted. Like you, yep. Maggie has no choice but to go and take Herschel with him.
He towed the line.
Yeah. I mean, because Ginny did the same exact thing. She stepped up even against Maggie's wishes and she was drafted at that point. So if Herschel had done it, Herschel would have been the same exact way. He would have been drafted.
And Maggie could have put up a stink, but when you look at it from a certain vantage point, all is fair. Like, all right, fair enough. Then he's coming. So I'm excited to see how he breaks out of the bricks and makes his way to Manhattan because you know it's coming. Like, just like you said.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, my only kind of nitpick about that whole thing is that it literally is a repeat of the Ginny storyline.
Yes, it is.
Ginny
yes,
snuck out of the bricks to go to New York City. And now that's what Herschel's going to be doing.
And yeah, all right, fair enough.
Maybe. We don't know. We don't know if that's what's going to happen.
New Babylon is a rehash of four different, you know, villain colonies. But hey, if they're captivating and they're interesting, I'm here for it. I like the Benjamin Pierce character. If we can get another kind of annoying but kind of charming know-it-all on the show, I am here for that. I always enjoyed Eugene. And there's something enjoyable about a know-it-all in this type of world that can like answer those questions that no one should know. But, oh, he's that guy that's been reading books since he was 3 years old. Of course he knows that. It's like Dumbledore. You just assume everything he says is accurate because it's Dumbledore.
I was always a big Eugene fan too. And I'm like, I'm enjoying him even more now that he's a lawyer. That's a Suits LA reference to anybody who didn't get it. And to anybody who's never met Josh in person, like he's Josh McDermott, who played Eugene. Josh McDermott is one of the nicest dudes and funniest dudes you will ever, ever meet. But I digress. He's not part of the series. Wouldn't it be funny if Eugene popped up next week?
I want for no reason, just because, okay, you're a spinoff. Do fan service. Give us somebody. Well, just somebody. Give me Aaron for like 3-episode arc. I don't know.
Oh, Ross would love that.
He would. Give me somebody. Just give me like, it's fan service. That's what spinoffs are for. They're for fan service. Do it up.
Who would, man?
It's Morgan. Morgan, it's always Morgan.
Morgan shows
he's
up
the
in
easiest
New York.
Crossover.
I think we said that last week, too.
I'll say it every week.
When is Morgan showing up? That'll be the running joke throughout the entire
Morgan
the entire
Watch
run.
2025.
Morgan Watch season 2.
Through all of the spinoffs, Morgan Watch.
Oh, God, if he shows up in Paris, that would be...
If he shows up in Seattle as a member of the Wolves, then we know things have gotten out of control.
Oh, my God. He's really in Boston. He's a member of the still existing Fire... He's the lone Firefly.
Okay. You got it clear, baby. Got it clear.
That is not a spoiler. That is not a spoiler for The Last of Us, by the way. That's just...
Not even close.
We're making a joke.
So the bricks and the New Babylon folks, anything that you wanted to say on any of the new people or Pearly 2.0 and this new side of Pearly that we're seeing this season?
So I want to go back a little bit earlier before Maggie even decides to step up in place of everybody from the city before she goes through the trial. We get that scene with her and Herschel where they're going through clothes and she's he's going to be giving up clothes. But we see her actually, Herschel has the hat that Negan gave to Maggie to give to Herschel.
Yeah, what did you take of that reveal that that's still a part of the story?
It means to me that Nagy.
I love it. That's no one. We are not shipping that.
That's what Herschel. No, God, no. We're not shipping
just,
Maggie.
In case anyone thought we were thinking it, we are not. We will never.
No, I was just thinking that's probably what Herschel calls her.
Naggy.
Naggy.
That's pretty good.
No, it's it shows me that just like she promised to take care of Ginny for Negan, as Negan asked her, she also gave Herschel the hat.
Yep.
Because Negan gave it to her. He said, hey, I found this in one of the souvenir shops, thought maybe Herschel would like it. And, you know, it shows she actually gave Herschel the hat. It was in his closet. So at some point over the couple months that have been gone by, she gave Herschel the hat. And
well, he knew about the hat, though. We knew about that at the end of season one.
Oh, that's true.
Because he found it. I think he found it in the bag and was somehow irritated that she got him something nice to commemorate his kidnapping, which I'm sorry. I always get my kids something to commemorate their kidnappings. How else are they going to remember
it? Oh, so maybe he doesn't know that it came from Negan.
Correct. Correct.
He thinks it was from Maggie.
Perhaps. At least I believe that's where they left it at the end of season one, inside the truck after they got out of Manhattan.
I think you might be right. He doesn't know that it's from Negan.
So he just kept something he thought was from his mom that got him something because she was thinking about him while she was in New York. It's kind of sweet.
But again, it adds to that moment when she sees it in the closet that she could have very easily, well, she wouldn't have given it up, especially if he thought it was from her.
Yeah.
Because it would be weird it would have been weird if for her to say like, oh, let's just give this to somebody else.
For sure.
But there is that moment of hesitation when she gets the hat and she's looking at the hat.
Yep.
She knows where that hat came from.
Absolutely, yes.
So I think that's a prime example of the guilt. As much as she denies it, Maggie has guilt that she left Negan behind.
She knows that she left him there to die. Or at least she left him there comfortable with the assumption that she was leaving him there to die. She didn't know for sure, but she knew it was on the table and she made peace with that. And like,
she left him to the unknown.
She left him to the unknown. And I don't blame her. I mean, if that's how you save your kid, you get out there and you find your effing dog, to quote Billy Madison. Like, you do what you got to do to bring your kid home to an extent. Like, and it's Negan. If I don't know. I don't blame her, but I get would be guilt ridden.
Her mission was accomplished.
Yeah.
She went there to get Herschel back.
Bring Herschel home.
That was why she went. And 100%. To do so, she delivered on what she said she was going to deliver. She brought Negan to the Croat.
And it's not like Negan wasn't willing at the end of the day. It's not like he fought all the way up to turnover. He accepted his fate, and he didn't let Maggie lose. Like, he accepted his fate and let it happen. So there was a sense of resigned willingness on Negan's end. But no, you're right.
Yeah. So that was interesting seeing her with the hat and knowing that there was definitely some guilt there. Sure. You know, but then after that is when we get that Firefly story, which was very, very touching, which we already touched on. So we see that there is some improvement in Maggie and Herschel's relationship.
Yep.
But it's about to go downhill again.
Sure is.
And that leads me to sticking with the bricks since we're already there. You mentioned Pearly.
I did.
And this new version of Pearly that we're getting, who is more accepting that people might not be, you can't judge the book by its cover.
Less black and white than assumed.
There are shades of gray. Yep. Exactly.
Yep.
But in that conversation with Maggie, we also find out that we know why New Babylon wants the methane.
Absolutely.
And it's because they've been producing ethanol for fuel. But their corn crop is dying because of moths.
Yep. Makes perfect sense.
Nature is kind of wreaking havoc on their way of life.
It's doing its job.
Yeah.
Nature is nature.
And this is why they found a new way to get fuel, and they want to take it.
And that's just common for society, I think. Once you drain a specific resource that you require to survive, you go find alternative ways. Some folks negotiate with words, some with money, some with force. And New Babylon is clearly a force first option.
I have to nitpick this a little bit too.
Go on.
This whole we're losing fuel because our ethanol is we can't produce ethanol because of moths. That's fine. I get that. That's nature taking over. How does New Babylon expect to claim methane from an island?
Right, and transport it off of said island and get it to the masses. How can they think that the New York City scientist, being the Croat, who figured all of this out, will share with them the technology, because it's going to be necessary to create additional satellite methane-producing plants, because there's no way you're going to be able to transport it easily to like, so their entire idea is stupid of taking it by force. You have to try and negotiate first.
Well, not only that, but if you clearly know there's methane.
Yep.
You have to have figured out where the methane is coming from.
Right.
You have the basics of how to do it now. All you have to do is develop your own technology to capture methane from walkers. Why do you have to go to New York to take it? That's because how are you going to do that?
Yes. And that's because if I remember correctly, they bombed all the bridges. There's no way to transport a tanker with liquid or gas. I don't know what methane is, across the waterway. All right. Thank you. Yeah. Again, the infrastructure is not there. What is their plan? Their plan is so half-baked for a supposedly well-oiled machine. Their plan seems kind of flat.
Yeah. Are you going to build a pipeline from New York over to the mainland? Like, it's now, I know we're criticizing this a little bit. It could be explained later on.
Sure.
But for right now, this is such a bad plan.
For what we understand about the variables that have been laid to us, again, the roads in and out have been destroyed. We are talking about methane gas, and their desire and the way that they're selling this to communities is, we're running out of ethanol. We're going to replace it with this methane that we're going to get from New York City. So all in all, the entire plan is flawed because of that damned waterway. And just how are you going to do it? That I have, like, what is your end result? What is your out plan? They have not shared that.
Well,
I'm fascinated to see what it is.
I'm going to backtrack a little bit, because as much as we're criticizing this plan, I'm now realizing, and forgive me, listeners, if you're screaming at your listening devices right now, they actually do mention that this is just the first wave, and they want to go into New York.
Fair enough.
They want to repopulate New York. So their idea is to actually move to New York. So basically just spent like a good 2 to 3 minutes on something. We just remembered we know the plan.
Huh. Well, there
we're
you
off
go,
to
folks.
A banging start for episode one of this podcast,
sure,
aren't we?
Sure are. And that's the Bricks 101.
I'm just picturing people like throwing shit at like, we know the plan.
Usually that's me in my car driving to or from work as I'm listening to you guys. And I'm like, how do you not remember this? So egg on my face. I've been all right.
Hey, look, send your medical bills from banging your head against the wall to Ben and Alex, and we'll take care
just
of
Ben.
It.
Just Ben.
Okay, or just Ben.
Just Ben. I'm good.
You know, even though you went along with everything I said, it's just,
I did,
you know,
but you're host,
I'm the host, so I'll take
it. There it is. He gets it. I'm just Andy Richter over here, guys.
You know what? And what's funny is I even have it right here in my notes. Claims to want to restore Manhattan.
There it is.
Oh,
there
good
it is.
Lord.
I feel like I've exhausted brick talk at this point. Like, that's literally every note I had on the goings on at the Bricks. And the cool thing about this episode is it truly just split the content in half between the Bricks and New York City. So I feel like we haven't done a lot of time on the Negative at all. Do you want to hop over there?
Well, the only other note I have here on, let's see, because we talked about how Maggie kind of trades herself for everybody at the Bricks who doesn't want to go.
Yep.
And we also find out when we're talking about Pearlie is that Pearlie is actually now a colonel.
Yes.
He has been promoted, but it is kind of deceitful because he got promoted for doing a job that he didn't actually do.
Which sounds very, very governmental when you think about it.
Yeah, that's also true. Some things don't change even in the apocalypse.
You know, even in the apocalypse, DC gonna DC.
And we kind of played into it a little bit too, that Ginny also enlists to go to New York with Maggie. What is her motive for wanting to go?
She needs closure from Ginny knows her dad wasn't great Maybe Ginny knows her dad wasn't with a bunch of great people. Maybe Ginny has had time to reflect and think on the information that was just kind of thrown at her doorstep and like has really had a chance to just wrap herself in all of those ideas. And maybe she wants closure and she needs to hear from Negan himself the story of what happened. That's my guess, is that she needs some closure.
Yeah. I mean, it's either that or she wants revenge.
Yeah, but I'm not getting,
I'm not convinced it's that either.
No, she's not Ellie.
Yeah, that's a good point too. So, I mean, I'm not convinced that it's revenge either. I think she's going over there for the sake of saving Negan.
Absolutely. Yes.
So,
yeah.
But other than that, I think that's pretty much all I have for, we said Herschel's brainwashed. So, yep. You know, that is what it is. Yeah, I think that's kind of all I have for the bricks. So we can kind of shift gears and get everything wrong about New York like we just did the bricks.
Super excited, folks. Super excited. Now, timeline-wise, do we know exactly how long it's been since the season finale and the season premiere?
We do know that it's been a couple months. That's, okay. I think that's all we've – it's been kind of we implied. Know,
what I gathered was he said to the Dama, I turned your offer down months ago. And I do it again. But he also said to the guard at his jail cell, you've been coveting my, you know, shit and piss bucket for a year. So I'm curious, is it like, I'm going to guess 9 months is where I'm just landing.
Did he say a year?
He did say a year. I okay. Double checked it today when I rewatched it that he did mention a year, but that could just be him rounding up. You know, he was a gym teacher.
It could also just be him screwing around too, because the guy very also true. Says like, no, like I've actually just been covering the ratchet blanket.
Very true.
You know, so I don't know. It is what it is. But I think you're right. I think it could be, my guess is probably, you said 9. My guess is probably somewhere around like 6.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That works too. Like in that range, I think that's fair. And
because we know it's been long enough that Negan is desperate enough to eat cockroaches
for sure, but has also been getting regular visits by a barber because his beard is only about the same as it was when we left him last season. So,
well, his hair is also
true. Also true. So at least they are doing that for him. Yeah, that's nice. I will also say, I love that this week's theme in apocalyptic television shows surrounded by the infected is string instruments will bring you joy, because
that's
first
a good
off,
point.
First off, Ellie and her acoustic take on me on The Last of Us, I cried more than Nina did, and she cried buckets. And then there's something about a violin or a viola. I don't know which one that is. My daughter plays the viola. I should probably know that. But like, it's such a gorgeous instrument. And to be in a post-apocalyptic world where you haven't heard a string instrument in upwards of maybe even 10, 15, 20 years, and then someone plays that, how does that not make you want to weep? Just thinking about not hearing Vivaldi for 20 years and then it being introduced to you, how is that not just, oh, everything? I loved that moment.
And I mean, if you've listened to the cast of us covering on The Last of Us that you probably heard the day before you're listening to this, you heard me say the same thing, that cover of Take On Me made me cry.
Oh, like, my God.
I got gorgeous. Legit choked up.
And I don't care if it was overdubbed. I don't care how they made it happen. The lighting, the performance, the looks, beautiful.
But, I mean, you're right. We do see – when we first see Negan in this episode, he is imprisoned. He has been there for a couple of months. He is desperate enough that he is eating cockroaches as meals. But it has been long enough that he has developed almost a rapport with this guard who is willing to secretly, it almost seems, perform. The violin for him, you know, because he says, like, is it clear? And then he starts playing, because this guy probably doesn't want to get in trouble for entertaining.
For sure. But Negan's a charming son of a bitch. That's 99% of his aura. And he can get his guard to play a ditty for him. That's,
well, I mean,
Negan.
You're right. It's that charming sake. I mean, look, we saw a lot of this happen with Negan locked up at Alexandria with the conversation with him and Carl. I mean, this is. Oh, I don't want to say reminiscent of that, because he was trying to persuade Carl. This seems more friendly.
What I find fascinating is just how comfortable Negan is behind bars. You know, when
he's
you really think about it, he's so used to it in the apocalypse, just being behind bars at this point. He adapts and survives.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Well, because I also think, and we talked a little bit about this in the recap too, that Negan is kind of, he's accepting of the consequences of his life at this point. He kind of realizes that, look, if I rot here, this is what I deserve. So he's kind of accepting of that, but there is something that is brought to his attention that changes everything.
And that right there is the perfect segue, because I was going to say, the beauty of all of this is the Croat is a surprisingly good salesman. His pitch is legit. Come to the side, protect the people, have all the power and everything that you need. And for the Negan he knew back then, that sales pitch was money. But the Negan he meets now, that sales pitch doesn't work. And the Doma knows it, and that's why she's got the better hand. She's got 3 aces and 2 8s. She's got the dead man's hand, which is, you're going to protect this city because I'm bringing your wife and son to this city. So if you
Anna and Joshua, they're on their way here.
Which, brilliant. The only way to ensure that he wouldn't screw this up is to make them collateral damage if he fails in his job. Brilliant.
Yeah.
She
knew his weakness.
And she exploited the shit out of it, and it was beautiful.
100%. But we talked a little bit about that in the recap last week too. Is like, what do we think happened to Anna and Joshua?
Yes.
And we were unsure of it. And not even an episode later, we're finding out they're on their way to New York.
Because Anna was one of those characters that when she was introduced in the final season, I got real mad I only got one season with her. I thoroughly enjoyed her character. I adored her rapport and her way of keeping Negan in check. I thought she was, simply put, absolutely badass. And I think she's someone that will do very well in this story, hopefully.
But now it's going to cause more friction, because how does Anna feel? I'm sure Anna and Joshua do not know that they are, well, maybe they do. Maybe they do know that they're being brought to Negan. Maybe they think that Negan summoned them. Like, this is, they've been deceived into thinking that Negan knows where they are. Negan's bringing them to Newark to protect them.
Yeah.
And then they might find out that wasn't the case. Like, they were used as pawns to get Negan to be the person that he's becoming again.
It'll be a hell of a reunion. I can't wait. It'll be the second most anticipated reunion of the show after the first most anticipated reunion, Ben, which I think is with Negan and his first wife. That's Lucille. Right. Lucille 2.0, mind you, which I think I'm going to tentatively go on record of saying, I think Lucille 2.0 is stupid.
Okay.
I really do. I think it's really dumb.
This was going to be my question to you.
Okay.
Is how do we feel about Lucille version 2?
So they made Lucille non-lethal by giving it a shack pad. Cool. Really stupid and a little bit over the top. I love Lucille. All you need is barbed wire around a bat. You do not need to upgrade it. Like, the only other upgrades would be, I don't know, random razor blades sticking out of it. But that's a dumb change.
I'm conflicted.
Go on.
So I agree with what you said. The OG Lucille, we've come to know that weapon for what it is. It is the barbed wire bat with, you know, there you go. Listeners, you can't see it.
I'm just inspecting OG Lucille and
now
she's perfect.
But that you just kissed Lucille before you put her down. That was hysterical. Here is why I'm conflicted, because I see this in two ways. I see this as, one, you are messing with something that should not have been messed with, in that Lucille was the weapon of all weapons. Like,
yep.
Nothing more than a simple baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire, but Negan is the one that made that what it was.
Weapon made the man. Man made the weapon.
On the other hand, This could also be used by giving it a non-lethal aspect.
Yes.
Could also be used to help Negan put on the persona of who he used to be without doing the damage that he used to do. He doesn't have to bash heads now. He doesn't have to fully transform into the old Negan. To be the old Negan, he would have had to kill with that. And I'm not saying he won't.
Right.
We saw him do it in season one.
For sure.
But the non-lethal aspect is a way to make Negan put on the persona of who he was without becoming who he was.
And I hope that they use this as an opportunity for Negan to reckon with himself as opposed to... because the simple fact of the matter is, in this world, with the three groups, the money, the bones, and the hoodies, you know, he's going to have to... Until they give us names, I'm naming them myself.
That was fantastic.
The money, the bones, and the hoodies, okay? He's going to have to bash heads.
Shock, is Kim Electro, Coach the money?
He is, yes, yes. And then Kristoff is the bones. And
the bones.
The random druids, God love them, the Seraphites, they're the hoodies. Every story's got to have one now. So, well,
see, but like I know the, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but I know the point that you're getting at is that he's going to have to bash heads to make an impression. So. But I don't think he does, because I mean, the episode title alone, Power Equals Power, he sure showed that they have the methane, that they have the ability to relight this city. We have power. He doesn't have to show physical power. They now have it in other ways. Okay. He has something else to show he's in charge. It doesn't have to be brute force.
That's true. And he could conscript that specific task down the line anyway. So he doesn't necessarily have to swing the bat. Again, that's a cop-out. He's still ordering the hit, and Ed Stark would be very, very disappointed. But I just – if Kristoff didn't see it in the beginning – why it made sense for them to band together and protect what they have. I don't know if a little, like, you're going to have that one group of radicals that just, no matter what, they're not going to fall in line. There's no way all three families are going to fall in line. So how's that going to go?
I don't know. I think they might. And I think the old Negan would have bashed Kristoff
100%
easily without 100%. Hesitation.
He would have known he had to.
And that's the thing. Like, he needs them all to come together. So to kill them is going against what they need.
Yes.
And even in the end, in the final moments of this episode, where we see Negan walk back into the cell, he drops Lucille. He doesn't put her down. He drops her. Because that's that is not who he is anymore. This persona, or this Negan, is nothing more than a facade now.
Yep.
This is not Negan.
But, all right, I was going to save this for late, but how much of Negan is Daniel Day-Lewis? Like, is he going to go full method? Is he going to get Beauty and the Beast Stockholm syndrome of you get into the character enough? Here's another theory I have. I think Negan's home base / penthouse is going to be the crown of the Statue of Liberty, and I think he's going to feel real damn powerful. Like straight Tommy Lee Jones in.
You mean if he becomes Batman the Forever. King of New York?
For sure. I actually think by having him be so ardently against that idea right now, they are soft peddling us to him getting a little bit drunk on power by the end of the season. And
well,
go ahead.
We did talk about that last week in that, like, how would this ultimately end? And, you know, how I said I would like to see this end with Negan actually being redeemed and taking over New York and making it a place where people can come and share in everything, which is what New Babylon claims they want to do, but we know is not the case. They purely want to take it for power, because if they take over New York with the power, they can rule everything with their laws.
Absolutely.
Negan, I think, is something different. Now, when I say that Negan is portraying a facade right now for the sake of doing what needs to be done, do I think he will go method at any point? Right now, I don't. If Anna and Joshua are there and their lives are threatened, 100% he will.
Fact.
Because it needs to be done to protect them.
What if
his motivations are completely different now?
Okay, I like it. And you know what? I was going to throw out a speculative theory, but let's get a little farther into the season before I throw that theory out there, because I don't even want to go there, just in case.
Okay, all right. That's fair enough. But I mean, like, seeing him, it was weird because I have it written down in my notes as Negan's sermon.
That's exactly, as a Catholic school survivor, man, I was having flashbacks to Friday afternoons and Sundays, and it was really churchy, and it was effective, for sure.
I wasn't a church, so, you know.
No, that helps. It does.
But, you know, it's, and I, because I even have Negan is back question mark underneath of it, too. But it was almost very symbolic, because he is in that back room, or in the front of the church, waiting to make that walk down to the pulpit, and right as he does, there's these bright lights that come in. It's almost like the redemption, or like the rebirth of Negan.
Oh, didn't you understand what they were doing, Ben? They were unveiling the Savior.
That's a good point.
The Savior.
That's the symbolism. But
that's how I interpreted that. Like, oh, here is our Savior, our Messiah to our oncoming problems. Here is the guy that will save us, because that's what Negan has always done. He's a Savior.
And I don't want this to the listeners to come across that I am fanboying over Negan. I am looking at this from all sides. I'm looking at this objectively, but from what I'm seeing so far, just in this first episode, I'm not seeing a full conversion back to Negan. I can see it going that way if certain paths go in a certain direction. But for right now, again, him dropping Lucille, using a non-lethal method, I see this as nothing more than a facade.
I agree with you. And I think that's exactly what they are telegraphing to us right now. I see where it could go in alternative avenues, but I have made a career out of incorrectly guessing where The Walking Dead was taking me. So I could very, very, very easily be wrong. I wonder what would create the most interesting and complex story. I wonder, and I don't know. I trust them after seeing season one again and now watching this episode one, which was good. This was a very fun, captivating episode. Like, it kept my attention the entire hour. It was fast paced. It was interesting. Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was a really, really, really good episode of television.
I thought it was a strong start to the season.
It was. It was a really strong start. So I'm trusting them, and, you know, am I going to have questions with logic sometimes? Sure. Which brings me to my next point before we get to the church, Ben, the Zed fight. Okay.
I'm glad. You mean our zombie battle bots?
Yes. So I decided the moment I saw what they were building for me, you know what, folks, I am absolutely going to ignore logic and just enjoy this fight for a couple of minutes, which I did. And it was hilarious and brutal and delightful. Having said that, if we bring a little bit of logic back into it, A, why would one Zed attack another Zed without food being at stake? And number two, how likely is it for a Zed to be trained on a kill shot? Those are my two biggest issues.
So I'm going to start with the second one first, because I do kind of have a little bit of reasoning for that, too. And this is the reason why I called them zombie battle bots, is because if you look at what they're wearing, they're designed to have protrusions coming out so that Zed goes in, it's not intentionally doing that. It is, you know, just by happenstance that it's going to impale another Zed as it's going in for a bite.
Yep.
So I can explain that logically. That's right. Just what they're wearing is designed by whoever is supporting that Zed, whoever's rooting for that Zed.
I get it. And BattleBots is a very apt comparison.
That's why I call them zombie BattleBots.
No, yeah. That's beautiful.
Now, to the first point, the only thing I can think of is this is kind of a little bit of reversal of what we've seen so far, in that people have been able to walk through hordes and walk through Zeds by putting zombie guts on them. Mm-hmm. So what if it's the opposite of that? Because we do see they look bloody. What if they are smothered with human or animal blood to attract them to one another?
Okay, now that I like. I like the idea that they bathed him in some blood and then threw him there, because that makes perfect sense for why they would be attracted to one another. Thank you.
Just the same as they have disguised themselves as Zeds before, they're disguising Zeds as actual living human beings.
I needed that, because that was really bugging me. Thank you so much. That I'll be able to sleep soundly tonight.
That's good stuff. I'm happy that I was able to help. And I'm happy that you brought that up, because I have zombie battle bots in my notes.
I think we just made up for the whole New York thing. I think we just made up for that just real quickly. That felt good, Ben. That felt real good.
Good. I'm glad. I only have one final note, and it's literally the end of the episode. So if you have anything else
we did it. That's all of my notes. That crushed that.
So then I'm going to wrap up with this before we just wrap up the coverage of the episode with this, is that I made no bones about it. One of the main reasons why I was so attracted to the show isn't just because of Jeffrey Dean Morgan as Negan and Lauren Cohan as Maggie, is because I just love the city of New York.
Yes.
I love that the city is itself a character. And now in season two, we're already starting to see more of the city. And I love the fact that Central Park is being portrayed as a no man's land.
And a major player.
The way that they said, like, you can go into Central Park, but nobody ever comes out. That is true of today sometimes, that you can go into Central Park at night and not come out. And Central Park is so vast that it is – I can't wait to see what happens that if they have to cross and enter Central Park.
And I think they do, because with the, you know, upcoming on this season of the Dead City, it did show them walking through some very, very, very tall grass, which would make perfect sense to be Central Park after 15, 20 years after the outbreak.
Well, even at the end of the episode, we see like the zoom in Central Park, and it's just nothing but growls of Zeds.
If we don't get an overnight terrifying, absolutely terrifying episode of this show in Central Park, then they have missed an opportunity, because that set piece, there's a lot of possibilities there. I like it a lot.
There's so much they can do with Central Park because of the fact that it is – I love the idea that this is just an area that they've never cleared. Of all of the city of New York, this is an area that they never cleared.
Right. They never even bothered with it.
Yep.
I love it.
So, but I mean, again, that just also goes to show you that how vast the city is and how really unlimited that resource of methane really is, because they've gotten enough just from zombies in the outer perimeter of Central Park. They could go into Central Park and get more, but they're not going to.
Right.
So
no, I'm very intrigued to see how that all plays out, because you don't set up that set piece without using it. And I can't.
Oh, it's absolutely. Yeah, they're absolutely going to use it.
Super excited for that.
Any final notes on the episode?
Not really on the episode. I guess overall, I have a quick question. So what I did yesterday, and I'm curious how many other podcastikins did this. How many folks watched both Dead City and The Last of Us in the same night? And just the compare and the contrast of completely different worlds and tones centered around the idea of the infected. It's just, I don't know. It was a very interesting dichotomy, because with Dead City, it was fast paced. There was a lot going on. Whereas The Last of Us, it is a very mercurial, slower, prestige based build of storytelling.
Yeah. I also want to, since you're bringing up The Last of Us, I want to put a apology out there. Last week, we revealed a spoiler from The Last of Us.
It
was brought to my attention before the episode got big, so it was edited out.
Oh, thank goodness.
It was handled. But there might have been one or two people who might have heard it via the Patreon feed before it got edited and replaced. So if anybody heard it, and we spoiled something for you for The Last of Us, I apologize. It will not happen again. And if you don't know what we're talking about, if you listened to last week's episode and you have no idea what we're talking about, it means we got it done quick enough that you didn't even hear the spoiler because we took it out.
Bazinga. Thank goodness.
It was the spoiler of when we said, no, I'm not doing it.
That would have been good.
So apologize if anything got spoiled for you for The Last of Us. And it was an episode that had already aired. Okay. So if you watched The Last of Us, you already knew what it was. But if you were behind and you hadn't watched the episode yet and you've never played the game, it was considered a spoiler.
That so, tracks.
Won't happen. Promise. We won't do that again. Because now I'm like really careful anytime we make comparisons.
Well,
to the
now
last
that
of us.
I've been now, all right, I'm gonna try and limit that.
Yeah.
Oh man. Exactly.
I was listening to everything you said this episode. I'm like, we're good.
Okay. Been, cool.
Nothing's
half
been
the time,
spoiled.
I don't even listen to what I say. So as long as one of us did, that's good.
So before we start to kind of get into notes and everything, you watched the behind the scenes.
I will
episode.
Always watch it behind the scenes, and if they allow it, I love behind the scenes and just hearing that input from the actor on the decisions that they make in the moment.
I pulled a clip from the behind the scenes
is this the infamous story?
Yeah, there's a story that is told by Jeffrey Dean Morgan. It's only like about a minute and 15 seconds. But
did you know about it before the episode?
No.
He talked about it like 6 months ago. He accidentally let this scene slip when he was doing an interview, and like they've shut it down ever since. But kind of like our episode last week, it was up there for like a good 2 weeks where he revealed this story, and I've been waiting for it, and I couldn't believe it was episode one.
I had no idea about it. And then when I watched the behind the scenes, I was like, that is just
amazing.
Amazing and messed up at the same time.
Oh my God.
So if you watch the episode but you didn't get to watch the making of, we're gonna play the clip. And this is about, it's a story from Jeffrey Dean Morgan where he talks about eating the cockroaches. So here's the clip from the behind the scenes.
I got the cockroaches again. Here's the deal. Eating a plate of cockroaches when you're blind and your character doesn't get to wear glasses is a problem. And they were like, oh, Jeff, this one's like filled. This is like a chocolate thing. And this one's filled with like custard or something.
Mikey said, James, I really need you to make a very overloaded, juicy roach for Jeffrey. Just one.
Well, yes, I did tell James Rosenthal to make an extra juicy cockroach because I wanted to see it shoot out of his mouth.
And I kept eating these things and going, that's not chocolate.
And, he's a good friend of mine, so you got to around a little bit, right?
No one told me that half the plate was real cockroaches.
Oh, just how I like it.
And so I probably ate 10 to 20 real cockroaches before I even found out there was real cockroaches on the plate.
Yeah, so I put one in my mouth too, and it was disgusting. But, you know, but they are baked and cooked, and they are edible. And in other places of the world, they eat cockroaches.
I'm like, I can't, you guys, it's just like a brown thumb to me. I'm going to eat it. Just f***ing ass. My crew is just ass.
It's such a great story, and it was so funny to hear him tell it, too.
Because he's an EP, isn't he? He's an executive producer?
I think so, yeah. I think
so he's right when he says, my crew. God love it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
There was also, if you can find it, too, Lauren, Jeff, Scott Gimple, the actor that plays Pearlie, the actor that plays Lucia, Kim Coates, a bunch of them just did Paley Fest in New York. Oh, nice. That I was actually supposed to go to interview them, but my credentials fell through. But there's a lot of good footage out there.
Nice.
Of them being interviewed on the red carpet before they showed the episode. So
hell yeah.
A lot of good stuff to look up if you can, if you're interested and you want to go awesome. Online to find it.
Nice.
Any final notes?
That's it for me. That's episode one.
All right. I'm looking forward to seeing where this season's going to go.
Me too. I think they have given Maggie and Negan a lot of room to work with. I hope that some of these characters we met this week will survive past episode three. That would be a change of things. And just, you know, start to really build the rest of the world out. I think they're doing a good job here of introducing alternative worlds, alternative characters. I want them to keep building from this small idea, now expand. Now they can do that. So I'm excited.
And the fact that in just one episode, we were able to make multiple predictions, we can predict different paths that this story could go.
For sure.
Means that they did a good job of setting up a good foundation and leaving us really kind of in the lurch and kind of able to formulate and not predict where they're going to go. Well, where they're going to go, but not know where they're going to go.
Right. It's not telegraphed, but it's breadcrumbed, which I appreciate. Give me breadcrumbs I can eat. I don't need anything telegraphed. Yep.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. That's our show, episode 641. Of course, thank you, everyone, for listening.
Next up for the cast of us is the feedback episode for The Last of Us, season 2, episode 4. Day one.
And I think Lucy's going to be a part of that episode too. So you're going to hear Lucy come back. Yeah.
Nice.
If you want to write in or leave us a voice message about this episode, as we said, we're going to start doing feedback for the episodes before we dive into the next one. So if you want to leave us feedback for your initial thoughts on episode one of this season or anything we said about this episode, except us being wrong about what New Babylon wants. We already know. We already know.
I mean, you could point out. I don't mind. But, you know, we get it. It's fine.
If you can do it.
Horses at this point.
If you can do it in a limerick,
ooh,
I'll accept it.
Or a haiku. I am a sucker for a good haiku.
Or a pun. If you can find a way to pun it, pun it.
Save that for The Last of Us, okay? Let's keep those battle lines drawn, Bron. Okay. We already talked about that.
That's fair. But if you want to write in or leave us a voice message about the episode, you can find all of our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, please check out our other podcast. The folks are covering You over on Strange Indeed or The Handmaid's Tale on House Podcastica if you need something to brighten your day.
A Handmaid's Tale is a way to brighten and your day.
You. When I need songs about female empowerment, I think of those two shows especially. No, so here's the thing. You is fun. Handmaid's Tale is too... It's too realistic of like a look at 5 years from now if a few things go the wrong way.
Five years from now.
And like Kara watches it and I can't watch it because it brings a visceral reaction out of me. So I just have her kind of tell me what goes on because I can't do it.
That's fair enough. But it's also worth listening to because Rima's back.
And anytime I get a chance to, you know, I loved Rima on the Cobra Kai cast. So any chance I get to hear Rima, I'm a happy camper.
And we heard her on the feedback last week with Eric and I for The Last of Us. And yes. That might not be the last time you hear her on The Last of Us either.
Ooh, so, nice. We'll see. All right, there you go.
All right, that is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Don't get bit, Russ, folks.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.